When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Fenway Rundown. This is Mass Lives Red Sox podcast, and as always, I'm your host, Chris Cotillo. I know we've had a lot of Red Sox players, managers, and coaches in the last few weeks, so I hate to disappoint you by dipping a little lower on the Red Sox totem pole tonight, but we do have I've been wanting to do this for a while. Two of my good friends on the beat, we have MLB.com's Ian Brown and Boston Sports Journal's Sean McAdam on what has suddenly turned into a pretty busy day for the Red Sox and the AL East. And with a lot going on, I thought it'd be good to bring these guys on to talk about it. So the big news that just went down probably 10, 15 minutes before we jumped on here, Corey Kluber, Red Sox target who lives in Massachusetts in the winter, is going to the Yankees, and based on my Twitter mentions, fans are really not happy about it. He's reportedly signing a one-year, $11 million deal to go there. He was obviously a guy the Red Sox were targeting, but it seems like, you know, the Yankees, for a few different reasons, which we'll get into, were able to make that deal tonight. I actually want to start with Sean, because Sean has been kind of a voice of reason on the Kluber stuff from the beginning and wasn't as, I guess, obsessed with the idea as a lot of other people have been. So Sean, what's your instant reaction to this happening tonight?
Well, look, I think it would have been a worthwhile investment for the Red Sox. My only issue along the way was that you need a lot more than Corey Kluber for that rotation. You're looking for volume, given that so many of the guys coming back to the rotation next year are going to be either coming off significant injuries, having missed the entire year, or have a history of injuries, whether you're talking about Sale or Rodriguez or Evaldi. So they need somebody that they can pretty much count on to give them 160 plus innings. Corey Kluber is unlikely to be that guy, having made just eight starts in the last 2 years. We all know he had a history of physical issues with Cleveland and Texas, shoulder, some other stuff that got in the way. So he's by no means a sure thing. The Yankees have their own issues with their rotation. Once you get behind Garrett Cole and then a big step down for Montgomery, they too have innings to fill. But I think when you have somebody, the reputation and resume of Garrett Cole as your number one, it's a little easier to fill in the rest of that rotation.
Yeah. Ian, were you surprised at how much he got? 1 year for 11, I think, is probably a little more than I thought he would get on the open market.
Yeah, not really, just because there were so many teams that looked at him the other day, and it seemed like his mark was moving. But I thought this was the guy the Red Sox were going to kind of target. You know, it would have been a risk, but, you know, sometimes you have to take a risk. And I can understand, you know, a lot of what you're reading on Twitter after this move goes down isn't very rational, but now, you can understand from the fans' perspective, because they've been waiting the last couple of years, you know, for Chaim Bloom, who's obviously looking at the big picture, to kind of do something that says we're trying to win now, we're trying to at least get to the playoffs now. And they haven't seen a lot of that, you know, the two off seasons since he's been, you know, the chief baseball operations, whatever, chief baseball officer. So yeah, I can see why fans are upset. They want a move to get them excited about this team. And to be honest, the Red Sox need a good move right now to get people excited about this team. I mean, they did one thing by bringing Alex Cora back. I think a lot more people are in favor of that than Warren. That was one thing that helped, but I think they got to do something on the hot stove here beyond, you know, Hunter Renfroe.
Yeah, and I think, you know, everybody thought that Kluber was going to be that guy. As we mentioned, he makes his home in Winchester, Master, in the offseason because his wife's from there. I think the big sticking point with him is Eric Cressy, who is a name a lot of people in baseball circles do know, but fans might not. He's like a training conditioning guru who actually was out of Hudson, Massachusetts for you know, a few years ago, and he's expanded to Florida. I think he does most of his stuff out of there now, but he has been tracking Corey Kluber's shoulder rehab this whole time. He's been had intimate knowledge of everything. He works closely with him, and Kluber's worked with him dating back to when he was in Hudson. I think he's still trained at the Hudson facility because I guess he was in Massachusetts during the winter, but he works for the Yankees now in kind of a big role on their training staff. So having that guy there, I think, is a huge advantage. Ian, that point that you just made, I think, is kind of the overriding theme of what we've seen from the Red Sox this winter. Like Hunter Renfro, Matt Andrees, those moves have gotten done, obviously, but a lot of swings and misses going back to Charlie Morton, Sugano, Kim, Canely, all these guys that they've been in on. And I think, you know, the running joke when we see Twitter is they're interested in everybody and not making the moves. From a fan's perspective, like you said, I get it, it's frustrating, but as the voice of reasons that we're supposed to be on the beat, I think, which we often aren't, don't you think it's a little too early? I think, don't you think just the calendar is making people panic when really, if you look at the market, it's really like December 1st based on how many guys are still out there?
Yeah. Oh, sorry.
Go ahead, Ian.
I was just going to say, yeah, because, you know, it's mid-January now, and usually this is the time you're saying, oh, there's a month before spring training. You better get your hot stove moves done. Usually teams have done this by Christmas, but obviously this year is different for a lot of reasons. Pandemic, the biggest among them, and the money teams lost last year, so they've been reluctant to spend money until they see what their budgets are. But yeah, there's still a lot of players left on that player pool out there, both free agency and I would assume via trade also. So I think that, you know, fans need to evaluate the team once they're in spring training, once they're in the thick of spring training, rather than just saying, okay, it's January 15th and the offseason is over. We remember when the Stanton move was made by the Yankees, everybody pretty much wrote that season off and the Red Sox won the World Series that year. Not that that's right. Going to happen this year. Yeah, I think people need to keep in mind that there's still a lot of guys out there.
John, do you have something on that?
There certainly is still time. And I know that we've seen this pattern the last couple of off seasons, where a few years ago we went into the start of spring training without J.D. Martinez, Bryce Harper, and Manny Machado having signed contracts. So we've seen this coming for the last couple of years. We've seen a more cautious approach taken by teams. We've seen clubs being willing to wait out the market and perhaps use the calendar to force the players and their agents to accept less. But you can also see it from the fan standpoint. They don't care about, oh, they were in on, or they were the second on Canely or any of that.
Yeah.
This is not about, you know, good effort, good try. This is about what have you done to improve the roster? And while there still is a month to go before what we expect to be the start of spring training, the fact is that the roster has not improved greatly. They have a platoon outfielder and a Rule 5 pick and a swingman to show for an offseason that began in the last few days of October. And if I were the Red Sox, I'd be very concerned, not just at the frustration that exists among the fans, but how little the team is being talked about as a result of no activity. I can't remember a time, even coming off some last place finishes as they've had in the last 10 years, where there has been seemingly less interest and less talk devoted to what the Red Sox are up to than I have seen this winter.
You saw those Bruins ratings last night, Sean.
Their best number in like 7 years, and people are excited about them. If the Celtics ever get back on the court, they're off to a pretty good start. I mean, it's interesting because the Patriots, for a change, are not part of the January landscape here. And it kind of, there is this big vacuum that the Red Sox could step into if they did something. And I'm not proposing that, you know, they try to win the winter and have all these big free agent splashes, because we've seen where that's gotten them in the past. But as I said, were I the Red Sox, I'd be concerned about not only how little has gone on, but how little interest is being displayed locally.
And you wrote the other day that the Red Sox don't seem to have a clear path in what they're doing this offseason between, you know, talking about wanting to add, trying to, you know, as much as they say want to contend in 2021, as unrealistic as that's been. And then obviously the last couple of weeks we've seen the Benintendi rumors, which to me don't make a ton of sense. We'll get into that. But do you think that's part of the problem, that, you know, these talking points about contending, in reality, what you hear about them is that they're trading, you're thinking about trading away a homegrown favorite type
player?
Well,
I mean, you know, some of that, I think Benintendi is a somewhat popular player, particularly if we're to generalize with female fans. There's some sort of star appeal there, which can't be completely discounted. But I think ultimately they're frustrated that there haven't been upgrades. And there has been also this scattershot approach at times. Well, we're thinking about moving Andrew Benintendi because $6.6 million does not seem like accurate reflection of his value in 2021. Mm-hmm. But we're also in touch with the agent for DJ LeMahieu because he's 32 and he's looking for a five-year deal. Well, you can't do both of those things. It's difficult to both try to contend in the short term and keep the big picture in mind. But there are times when some of the people they're linked to are counterintuitive. You know, if you're really interested in A, you shouldn't be also interested in B. And yet the Red Sox have decided internally that they're going to be interested in everyone. And the payoff is they haven't gotten anyone.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. Also, someone brought this up to me on Twitter, but interested gets thrown around, you know, by us, by other reporters a lot, because that's usually what, you know, either agent speak or front office speak is, where they can give us an answer, and there that qualifies as news. We don't know exactly how deep, you know, things are going and today.
And in a lot of cases, it behooves them to overstate the interest on the other side. Right. You know, an agent wants to give the perception that as many teams as possible are bidding for his client, and a team perhaps looking to trade someone might be doing the same, saying, oh, we're being knocked over by offers we're getting for this guy, because you create this market and interest when other teams find out that other, you know, that there are rival clubs bidding for this player.
Yeah, we've heard one guy we've heard about a lot of interest in this week, interest being the buzzword of the offseason, is Benintendi. Ian, just a basic yes or no for you. Would you make this move? I think you tweeted something that it seems weird that they want to sell low and on a high upside guy. So I kind of feel like I know where you side on this one.
I mean, the only reason I could see that they would trade him is if Heim Bloom is looking at it and saying there's clearly somebody on that free agent market, an outfielder who he wants to get, and he's pretty sure he can get. And then so he trades Benintendi, spins him off for whatever assets he can get. Certainly not going to be an A-level prospect. Maybe he can get a B-level prospect, maybe some sort of major league-ready pitcher. And then you go, I don't know, with Ozuna, bring Jackie Bradley Jr. back. You know, yep. I don't know what they have in mind. But there's got to be
Michael Brantley's another one there.
Yeah, Michael Brantley's a good one. I mean, if they're trading Andrew Benintendi, you know, at least if you believe the rumors, they want to trade him, then they have to have some sort of, there has to be like another side of the coin here. And then we're going to see why they want to move. Because in a vacuum, it doesn't make sense to trade him. You know, $6.6 million isn't a lot for somebody who was, you know, a really good player just 2 years ago. And it's hard for me. He's 26 years old. They've got to be able to figure out how to get more out of him. It's hard for me to believe that all of a sudden he's lost it and you can't get him back.
I agree almost across the board with you, Ian, but I would add one caveat that speaking to one executive in the game this week, he reminded me that while $6.6 million is a relatively modest salary up against 2019 standards, that the economic changes the game has seen, the uncertainty about fans in the stands, everybody belt tightening, looking to get absolute complete value for every dollar spent, $6.6 million is not nothing. And I'm not suggesting that the Red Sox are in a position where they can't afford a player under $7 million. Clearly they can. But I think it's this new economic reckoning has forced teams to look a little closer at exactly what they're paying their current players. And I think your scenario is spot on. they have an idea that they can either make another move, whether it be a trade or free agent, get an outfielder they like better, and still come out of it with something that they got in exchange for Benintendi. But at the end of the day, it does seem a weird time to try to move a guy coming off an injury-shortened, lousy season. I mean, you know, he played 2.5 weeks and had 4 hits. Now, that's not exactly a great sample size.
That's Ian Brown in the media game stuff right there.
Yeah, oh, right. You know, the timing of it is curious from a baseball standpoint.
And I brought this up, Sean, to you on the phone the other day, talking, obviously, not on a podcast, but if he hadn't signed that 2-year deal, I'll open this up to both of you, at $6.6 million after that year, would we have talked about him as a non-tender candidate before that deadline? Because I don't think it's impossible there.
Yeah, it's about what they were going to have to pay Martin Perez as part of the option. I think he was 6'5", if they had brought him back this year. And we all thought that was a slam dunk yes,
yeah,
for most of last season. And they walked away from it. And tellingly, although Perez has some interest from San Diego due to his long history with A.J. Preller, the GM there, they were both together in Texas, and Preller was instrumental in scouting him and signing him. But, you know, I think we all thought, like, that to me was the Perez moment was kind of a like, oh, things have changed. You know, like, where that would, you know, for a team desperate for pitching, here's a guy who pitched relatively well. He's not a ace by any stretch, but he's a solid, like, number 4 guy that showed he could pitch at Fenway, kept them in the game 80% of the time. Not a bad investment at 6.5, and they had no problem walking away from that. That, to me, should have signaled that, you know, that the economic landscape was undergoing an upheaval.
And San Diego turning down Mitch Moreland to $3 million after giving 2 prospects up for him a month before, I thought was another one.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with what Sean says, that the market has changed so much. And thinking all along, just getting back to the Perez thing, I mean, I was thinking all along that was a no-brainer. He was coming back.
Yeah.
And we just didn't realize we're just too close to it sometimes, just, you know, how much things were going to change. But as far as Benintendi, I don't think they would have, I think they would have tendered him just because they knew that they would have been able to get something in a trade for him. They would have.
I agree. There would have been some value there that they could have recouped.
I want to go kind of rapid fire because I don't want to keep you guys for too long, but there's, I think, 4 main areas where the Red Sox are looking: starting pitching, bullpen, second base / utility guy, and outfield. I wrote in my notes column that I'm contractually obligated to promote, you know, today about a bunch of the different guys that we're targeting. And there's a ton. Obviously Kluber's name was in the starting section, so he doesn't apply anymore, but on all those markets. So I'll open it up and give you each a chance, and then I'll give my name. We'll start with starting pitchers. Ian, start with you. The starting pitcher now with Kluber off the board, because he might have been your answer, that the Red Sox should sign.
Tanaka.
Okay. Why is that?
Because he's a guy who's shown the ability to win. He can give you innings, and if he's healthy, he's a pretty good pitcher. I mean, he's been better than Kluber just because he's been able to be on the mound the last couple of years. I mean, Kluber hasn't even been available.
Sean?
I'm going to say Jake Odorizzi, a guy that, while he was not durable in 2020, that was an aberration for him. In the previous, I think, 4 seasons, he had averaged 160 innings. He had made 30 starts, 29 or more starts, I think, in those 4 years. He's just, I think, coming up on 30 years old. There's a history with Tampa, obviously, and Bloom. But I just think he's a solid number 3 guy who can eat up innings. And as I said, that should be their primary focus in looking for pitching. That once you get Rodriguez and Sale back, you have to have somebody you know can take the ball every 5th day. And until this past season, Odorizzi proved to be that guy.
Yeah, he's actually my pick too. I just think for what you're going to have to pay him, which would be maybe 3 for 39, maybe 3 for 42, it's worth it. I think he he's a guy that can come and eat innings. Heimblum knows him as well as anybody, so that's also my pick. For second base, obviously there's a ton of guys out there, whether they go for a utility guy. They're in on a bunch of those guys, Kike Hernandez, Marwin Gonzalez, maybe Profar in the utility types for regular second baseman. It goes by D. Strange Gordon, but the artist formerly known as D. Gordon is one option. I know he plays a little outfield too, or I think he was a full outfielder in Seattle. I could be wrong. You have Tommy La Stella, Colton Wong, Cesar Hernandez, Jonathan Scope. So there's a ton of guys out there. Sean, who would you take for the second base pick?
Well, I think you have to answer this against the backdrop of what else is being done. If you're looking for somebody that can contribute there and also contribute elsewhere, I love Profar as a guy who can play the outfield and infield and a switch hitter. We all know how important versatility and utility are in today's game, and that would be a nice addition if you're looking for a more traditional everyday guy that might free you up to move Chavis or platoon Chavis in the outfield if you move Benintendi. And I like Colton Wong as an everyday solution.
Yeah.
Like Marcus Semien. I don't know. You know, you saw those rumors out there the other day. Obviously, he's a shortstop, so you might have to pay him a little more, you know, to convince him to make the position switch. But you know, that would be a high upside move. I mean, this is a guy who had a bad year last year, like a lot of people did, but he's in the MVP race 2 years ago. And I think this is a move that would get the fans a little bit excited to show that they're making an effort here. But other than that, I also really like Colton Wong.
Yeah, I heard, spoke to somebody today who said that they think that Semien wants to stick at shortstop. So that might be obviously an impediment to a deal because they're not moving Xander Bogaerts for Marcus Semien anytime soon. My guy, or I guess I'll go with two at that spot, Marwin Gonzalez, to me, I reported today that they were in on him. I think, you know, he is a guy, obviously the Alex Cora familiarity from Houston, and a guy that they think can play first base potentially as a complement to Dahlbeck. I think they are going to add either a left-handed hitter or a switch hitter at first, and he would fit that bill. And a guy, you know, I think Wong would be a great fit. I think all those guys could really fit for traditional second baseman, but Scope is a guy that I thought was going to be a star when he was in Baltimore, and it seems like he's just kind of bounced around a little bit, Milwaukee, I think, and Detroit last year, but a guy with a lot of upside, I think they could bring in there. Relief targets is next. I think there's a lot of guys, you know, obviously that are still out there. You look at the list and it's a very, very long list and guys who are going to get, you know, 1 year or minor league deals. We saw Hendricks get a mega deal behind him, Brad Hand, Joaquin Soria, Ken Giles, Sean Doolittle are some of the guys the Red Sox are in on. Giles missing next year due to Tommy John, but still they're definitely Alex Colome and other who they're in on. Ian, your pick for the Red Sox relief edition.
Who are the top five still out there? Give me a choice on this one. I'm losing track on this market just because there's been so much movement the last few days.
Colome, Hand, Yates, Soria probably is in that mix.
Yeah.
There's four. You want to pick one of those guys?
I think Yates would be a good move. Hand, I woke up this morning and thought that somebody had tweeted that he had gone to the Mets, but I guess that was a fake Twitter or somebody. I mean, he'd look good, but you wonder, you know, how much is he going to cost? He'd be, obviously, that'd be a great coup if they get Brad Hand. But I'm gonna predict that it's Yates, that it ends up being Yates.
And he's, according to a report tonight, coming close to a decision. I guess he's on the verge. So we'll see if they land him or lose out on another one. Sean?
Well, I was a big Archie Bradley guy, but someone else in particular picked him up over the last couple of days. So he's off the pitching board. I'm going to say Colome as a guy who has closing experience, but is also set up. Probably not going to cost you a ton. He had a big deal that got declined in Chicago, but I think he'd have to take way less than $10 million on a one-year deal. You could either have him in the eighth, still go get a more traditional closer, or if you wanted to keep Barnes in the setup role, you could have Colome close. You don't have a long-term commitment there. They clearly don't want to do that, particularly before they're ready to win. So to me, he's a nice stop.
Yeah, I like Colome. I'm going to go with one option that I mentioned, one guy that's a little off the board, but a familiar name. Soria has quietly pitched very well everywhere he goes. I don't know exactly where he stacks up stat cast wise. I think he's like 35 or 36, and I would have guessed.
Yeah, he is. And he doesn't throw hard, but he's always 91, 92. Doesn't, you know, it's like he hasn't lost, he doesn't have a great fastball, but he hasn't lost what he had either. And he consistently gets guys out.
I think he's, if you were to ask me, he is 45 and has played for 17 teams at this point, but he actually has posted numbers everywhere he's gone. My guy off the board, and this might seem a little ridiculous, but considering this market, considering what he might get, I think they should look into bringing Brandon Workman back. I mean, there's really no downside to that. If it's a, you know, 1 year low dollar deal or minor league deal, something like that. I mean, he was obviously he was here his whole career before that trade imploded in Philly, depressed his value heading into free agency. But that's kind of a why not type situation to me.
Yeah, he'd be inexpensive. He probably would like to come back here. They could probably get him for a few million dollars with some incentives. So that wouldn't cost anyone.
Talking about somebody's market who dropped from one free agent last offseason, how much money he would have got.
Oh, I know. I mean, definitely 2 or 3 years, and a pandemic and then an implosion over a few outings in Philly cost him a lot of money. We'll end with the outfield because obviously that mix is probably the most in flux out of all these spots. Renfro is in. Right now you have Benintendi, Renfro, and Verdugo. Jackie Bradley still out there. Benintendi might be on the move. Sean, your outfield pick for the Red Sox.
I'd like Bradley to come back, but given that Benintendi kind of has one foot out the door here, at least as far as the Red Sox are concerned, you're going to need somebody to replace him. So, I know this gets them back into the left-handed hole again, but I think Bradley and Brantley would be a pretty good combination with Renfro able to spell Brantley in left, occasionally play right with Bradley sitting, and then Verdugo moving over to center. So I would do short-term deals for both Brantley and Bradley, maybe 2 years, or maybe somebody like Brantley getting up there, you could get him a year and an option, but I think those would both be solid moves.
Yeah,
I like those moves too, but I'm gonna go with Ozuna. And all his power, you trade Benintendi and you replace him with Ozuna, and you got all of a sudden you got a pretty good power hitting outfield with Ozuna and Verdugo and Renfro there, and probably going to still need to add another outfielder beyond that.
Yeah, I was going to go with Ozuna too. I mean, it's going to cost a lot. He's not a qualifying offer guy though, right?
No.
Well, so that
he can't be. He was qualified last year. So
I thought. So I mean, that's the type of guy. If you want excitement, he's one of the more exciting players left on the board. And when JD leaves, if he's still around, slides to DH. And I think that does fit well. We'll end with this. I'll give mine, but I want you guys to have your chance of your bold prediction of just a move you think is going to happen. Sean, I know that you are pretty much 100% on the fact that Benintendi will be traded. So pick something other than that. But Ian, we'll go with you first.
I need him. Let Sean go first. I got to think about
it. All right. So you're going to copy his answer?
All right. They missed out on one Massachusetts guy, but I think they will eventually get another. I think Rich Hill comes back and signs a deal with the Red Sox. The Yankees had some interest there, whether that is closed off now that they have Kluber and they want to get somebody a little younger and maybe more durable. But I think Hill would be a nice back end guy. If you can keep him healthy, when he's healthy, he's shown that he can still be a very good starter. Terrific guy, as all three of us know. So maybe I'm leading with my heart there, but I think Rich Hill comes back to Boston for his third stint with the Reds.
Yeah, I'm the one of the three of us, as I by far the youngest, I'll point out, as always, that has never covered Rich Hill on the beat for as many stints with the Red Sox. So I'm not biased there.
Shows how green you are.
But he does pitching wise sound like a great fit. So I think that would be a good one. Ian?
I'm gonna go with another sentimental one, but not Rich Hill. I'm gonna say that John Lester comes back, and I just don't see it with the Cubs. They're obviously not gonna, it seems like they're gonna be selling, and they're not gonna be, I think the Red Sox are gonna be closer to being a contender maybe this year than the Cubs by the time the offseason is done. So I say get John Lester to fill out your starting rotation. Let him end his career where he started it.
If I gave you guys more picks, you'd go sentimental and they'd trade for Daniel Bard and Andrew Miller. Pedro would come out of retirement. Mike Lowell, all your favorite guys to cover would be right back here. Mine, I am going to make two predictions. One, I think they're going to sign Oda Rizzi. I think that just fits too well. Like I said, something 3 for 39, 3 for 42. Just get it done. They can jump the market. Now that they know where Kluber's going, don't have to wait for Bauer because they're not in on him. Just get that deal done. I think that would go a long way with fan frustrations. My other one is something that I've gotten a couple inklings of in the last couple weeks. I haven't written it yet. So I think if the bottom falls out of this George Springer market and they feel like, and he is unsigned into spring training, which it feels like the Mets aren't going there. The Blue Jays are a lot of talk and not a lot of action, like another team we know. The bottom really falls out of that. I think they'll legitimately consider whether it's worth giving up the second round pick for him. He might be the one exception to that rule there.
Yeah, I mean, he has worked he has the talent of somebody to give up a second round pick for. And that would justify whether cheaping out on some of these other guys if they go out and get George Springer.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, he solves a ton of problems. He gives you an above average defender in center. I don't think he's equal to Bradley, but he's good. But more importantly, two other things. A, he's a terrific leadoff option, so you don't have to worry about in the event that Benintendi somehow stayed and you had to put him there and he's not crazy about it. Verdugo, I think, has made it well known that while he'll do it, he would prefer to hit lower. So takes care of your leadoff guy. And as we know, Springer has shown himself to be a fabulous October player. He's had a ton of experience on the big stage with Houston the last 4 years. So you don't have to worry about how, presumably if someone can do that in the big moment in October, then playing in Boston with expectations would not be anything that would rattle him. Of course, he's got New England background, having gone to UConn.
And Alex Cora has, there are some damaged relationships from all the fallout of the Astros scandal. That's not one of them. Alex has said that he communicates with Springer pretty frequently. So that won't be an issue. So that's Sean McAdam and Ian Brown, two longtime veterans of the Red Sox beat. Thank you guys.
Say that one more time. Go ahead.
Two long time veterans of the Red Sox beat. Thanks, guys.